Most mothers do whatever they can to protect their children from harm. But what if that harm came from an unsuspected source? On today's podcast, we'll hear from a mom whose three daughters were abused by neighbors. Find out how she relied on God to help her through the unthinkable.
Oh, can't you see that grace carried me?
Hello and welcome to another podcast of Carried by Grace. I'm your host, Mary Spoonhour. Today I have with me a woman that, due to the sensitivity of our topic, we're going to give her a false name, and we're not really going to mention the name of her girls. So we're so glad that you've joined us today.
I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you being willing to share your story. It is a very tough story, and so I would challenge those of you listening that if you have little children in the room, you may not want to have them listen to this podcast. You might want to just put them in a different room or put on headphones, that kind of thing, earbuds. Just start with us a little bit. Tell us about your family, and then tell us some of the beginning of your story.
Yeah, so I have three girls, ages 12, 10, and 7, and they are the delight of my life. We homeschool, which has been a blessing throughout all that we have gone through, is to be able to be together in homeschool. So that's mm-hmm. been really great, and a big piece of the story, I think, of how we've gone through it. And my husband is a senior pastor, and I don't know what else.
That's enough, I think. That's a full life
right there. Yes, yes it is. And a dog. We have a dog.
Yay, we love dogs. So what happened in the very, let's start with in the very beginning of this particular episode and the stuff that you guys are still dealing with today. When did you start noticing that something was wrong, or that you start feeling off? Let's just say that.
Well, I will say I might have noticed stuff before we moved, but I don't think I was really able to put together anything. I just noticed that my kids were having a really hard time making good choices, really angry, really violent. And that was about the time. So we used to live in South Dakota, and we had planned on living there for a really long time. And then one day, my husband got this like message from the Lord, like, you need to start looking for another job. And he was actually working on the same thing in my heart and saying, I don't like it here. This does not feel like a good place for us. It's not a good fit for our family. Our family has a lot of allergies, and so we had to drive really far to get food and go to the doctor and all this stuff. And so he was just, God was stirring up this not wanting to be there anymore. It was just getting really, really hard and really overwhelming. And so my husband comes up to me and says, you know, I know this is going to freak you out, but I've been looking at other jobs. And I said, oh my gosh, that's amazing, because I want to move out of here. And I didn't know how to tell you. Mm-hmm. Which at the time we just thought it was because of things like the doctor and dance class being far away and food and all that. But really God had such a bigger plan going on that we had no idea about. And we now can see that God was rescuing us. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing. It wasn't just a fluke thing of we just decided to move. It was God was rescuing us and rescuing my girls from the horror that they were living through.
And how old were your girls at the time?
Well, I can say that the abuse, so I will say it was physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and spiritual abuse. So very all-encompassing. I will say it started from my youngest at 18 months, and then my middle at 5, and my oldest at 7.
And what was the tipping point? How did you find out about it?
So it's actually interesting because it's Martin Luther King Junior Day is our traumaversary, we call it. It was the day that one of my daughters was really struggling and just making horrible choices. And at one point she just grabbed a knife from the kitchen and was like so angry. And where are you getting this from? Like, you watch PJ Masks. Like, this right. is not something that we normally would see.
Right.
And I asked her that night, my husband and I sat down with her and we're very concerned. What is going on? Where are you seeing this? And she came out and told me it was our next door neighbors. And so I listened to it. I believed her, but I was still, I don't know, had a hard, it's not that I didn't believe her, but it was kind of mind blowing to me that that would be a thing because these people were our friends. We spent every weekend together with bonfires and had coffee and did the whole 30 together. Like, we were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anything like that in their life. So I was really confused. So the next day I asked my oldest daughter, hey, this is what my daughter said. I mean, this is what my second daughter said. Did this happen? And it became like a waterfall of just spewing out abuse story after abuse story after abuse story after abuse story of them just being horrifically physically beaten and hurt. And I do remember at one point I did say to the doctor when we were in South Dakota, I said, you know, my daughter has a lot of bruises on her. And they said, oh, you know, that's just normal kid stuff. That's nothing to be concerned about. So I just went on and said, okay, the doctor said it's normal kid stuff. So understanding it wasn't.
Right. So you had seen signs, but not knowing that they were signs, not knowing that it was
right.
coming from anywhere. Or, I mean, because yep. I think we've all had kids. I have a son who is particularly daring. And I mean, every time I turn around when he was little, I mean, he had so many broken fingers and broken ankles and just because he's the kind of kid who will flip and jump. And I took him in one year, I think 4 times for broken bones.
Oh, my word.
You know, he just, yeah. So I think we all go there as parents, depending on the child. But what kinds of, and you were still living at this time right next door to these neighbors, right?
We were living next door to them when I had noticed the bruises.
Okay.
So God actually rescued us on, it's on my ring because my husband gave me a ring, 10/23/19. And inside my ring it says rescue because it's what we call our rescue day. And then it was of 2019, and then 2020, Martin Luther King Day of 2020 was when they came out and told us. So they felt safe to be able to share what was going on now that they knew that they were no longer in danger.
Okay. So, I mean, that's a wonderful thing that they opened up to you right away when you asked and what was going on. Are you able or willing to share some of the things that they said was going on with them?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I know that they were physically hit with like hammers and stuff like that. I know that they were sexually abused. We're still trying to put the pieces together of what it actually was. Because with memories, everything just gets so confused and so messed up in their brains, in everybody's brain. Like, nobody's memory is exactly the same. So we're just trying to put the pieces together. But the pieces we have put together was that they were gagged and tied up and then sexually assaulted. And that my older daughter would often take the most amount of it so that her younger sisters weren't hurt. Sorry, it's hard to think about.
Yeah.
My brain hasn't connected to it necessarily, because it's just really hard to think about your kids going through that.
Yeah. Was this being done by an adult in that house, or was this by the kids they were playing with?
It was done by both.
By both.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Explain to me what happened. Would they just, the three girls, go over to play? And
yep.
then come back?
Yep. They had children our age, and they would just play, and they'd play at our house, and they'd go play at their house. And nothing. I mean, these people were people in the church. Not the church my husband was working in, but another church that was local. They were well-known people in that church. They just played together. They were just kids, being kids.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever notice anything when they would come back from being over there?
No. I remember my younger daughter really struggling and yelling a lot at the daughter over there. But it was more like she was intentionally trying to leave her out to make her feel bad. Like it was this weird like power manipulation thing. And so it was a balance of like, is this something that is just part of being a kid, or is this, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
Like it was this weird dynamic that didn't quite sit with me. My daughter would sometimes come and say, my vagina hurts, because we did all the things. We used the language that they say. And she would always come like right at bedtime when she didn't want to go to bed. So I would be like, well, it looks okay. And I'd look at it really quickly. And then we just kind of assumed she just was trying to get out of going to bed. I mean, she was 7 and didn't want to go to bed. And I didn't see anything that was, I was looking for like a yeast infection or something. But other than that, those were the only things.
Hmm.
And nightmares, lots and lots and lots of nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, kids have nightmares.
Right. And I know sometimes they mention things like wetting the bed, right? When after they've already been trained. Was that something that you encountered?
That was something that we noticed with my youngest child. She was fully potty trained, and then all of a sudden she was having accidents everywhere and wearing diapers fully again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's funny the things that they tell you to look for, but we don't always see them that way, because there are other causes sometimes, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're just, sometimes you have a kid that for whatever reason they'll go backwards in their potty training, or
yeah, exactly,
or kids do have nightmares, you know, that kind of thing. And like you said, yeast infections are common in little girls, those
uh-huh.
kinds of things. So it's always hard to nail that down as a parent when you're living day-to-day life and you're just not seeing anything really drastic, and so you just
right.
you don't
and
that,
I mean
it
wasn't
together.
Even on my radar,
right?
Why would I think that my neighbors were assaulting my children?
Right. And when your daughter opened up, what were some of your first thoughts? What did you and your husband, how in the world did you process some of that? Did you believe her? Did you think she was lying?
We believed them, because as our parents it's our job to believe them. No question. Like that was, I wanted them to know that they were safe and that we believed them. My husband and I went into, they all started talking on Monday. Tuesday was when it started really coming out, and it was like every time we got in the car, it was more and more drama stories, more and more like just horror stories. And Friday, I was changing my daughter's diaper, and I just felt like the Lord said to me, ask her if anyone's ever touched her here before. And I didn't want to, because what mom ever wants to like
right.
say that after knowing everything else that's been going on?
And how old was she? Because you're changing her diaper, but how old is
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she was about 3 and a half, I think.
Okay.
And she instantly said, no, one's ever touched me here, no. And then my other older daughter was there with her, and she said, you can tell mom now, it's okay, you can tell mom. And then they told us about how they were sexually abused. And I think my husband and I just went into shock, like total shock. It was, your brain doesn't know how to process something like that. And so I was a useless person, basically. Like, I just wanted to cry, but I couldn't cry because I couldn't connect to that feeling. Mm-hmm. My best friend came and basically like took care of us and took care of my kids, because I just couldn't function as a person. Mm-hmm. And my husband struggled with the same thing. And then my in-laws came to take care of us and just helped us through it until our brains could kind of come out of that shock. Mm-hmm. And then I went into problem-solving mode. My background is counseling and psychology. Mm. And so I already had my daughter in therapy. We had her in therapy in South Dakota because her anxiety was, she's always kind of had a little bit of anxiety, but her anxiety was really overwhelming. And then when we moved, we said, the second we get new insurance, we're going to find a new therapist. And so we had already had a meeting with a therapist, and we're about ready to start doing play therapy with a therapist. And so all of her like fears that we couldn't figure out what they were, like she was afraid of police officers and stuff like that. She was afraid of handicap spots, like all these different things that made no sense in regards to our life all of a sudden clicked together. And even the therapist was like, I have no idea what is going on because these are just all over the place. And then once this came out, we had already had therapy set up, so I was able to call her. Her partner worked with parents who have dealt with kids' trauma, and so we were able to get in to see her at the same time. And that was a huge, huge blessing. Huge blessing. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't ever alone in trying to figure out how to handle this.
Mm-hmm. How God had prepared the way before you, even.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My graduate degree is in counseling and psychology, and I've never ever had an actual job outside the home. And God always has said to me, I promise your degree is not for nothing. I promise it's not the time right now, but I promise your degree is not for nothing. And it's sad that this is what it was for, but this is what it was for. God has prepared me and made me the way I am to manage my kids and to help them through this. I don't think that if I didn't have the degree and I didn't have the personality that I have in the patience that he has given me, that we would be able to make it through the way we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to me. I'm always actually appalled at the families who go through stuff like this and don't get help for their children. Uh-huh. It happens more than we realize.
It happens a lot. They kept telling us, you're doing everything. You're doing absolutely everything you could possibly do for your kids. And we were just sending them to therapy and we had them on medicine. I mean, we didn't realize that that was such a big thing, but that's a really big thing. Most people don't believe their kids if they say it, or just, you're fine, it's going to be fine, don't need to talk about it.
Right. And I think just for those of you out there, if you've been through it, or if your children are going through it, or if down the road the Lord allows you in a place like that, one of the best things you can do is just get into some kind of therapy, whether it's, I would even say, even if it's just talking it out with your pastor or a Christian counselor. I mean, if you can go to a Christian therapist, that would probably be your best bet. But just talking it out is, because shoving that down and not dealing with the emotions and the feelings it causes more stress. And that stress, in turn, turns into physical ailments. We know from Scripture that the Bible teaches us that we are to think on things that are good and lovely and true and all of that. There's a reason for that. And if that kind of thing, that hurt and trauma, is not dealt with, it sits in your body physically as well. And so you need to get it out. You need to cleanse it. You need to deal with it. It is part of the healing process, just like a wound that would be, if you had a physical cut on your arm or your leg, you would not just leave it and not clean out all of the dead skin and the dirt. You have to get that out and before the healing can occur. And it is the same in our emotional and spiritual well-being. You have to get the dirt out. You have to get all of the infection out, and then it can heal.
And yeah, absolutely.
So it is really important to do that. I'm glad to hear that. How did your girls handle processing everything and actually talking about it? Did they do it well? Probably are still working through some of it.
Are still, and will be probably for the rest of their lives, to be honest. I think we all will be in therapy for the rest of our lives, and that's okay. That's a good thing. Well, my youngest only talks about things that are her triggers, things that make her think of the trauma. And for my oldest, for a while, went through a phase of saying it was somebody else that was completely unrelated to the situation, and wouldn't talk about it, would not say it happened, would say, no, she was a lovely person, everything was fine. And she just was in, like, total denial. But it was a really weird thing. And her therapist said, you know, we know that it's not this person. It's very obvious it's not this person. She just doesn't, her brain doesn't know how to deal with the fact that it was someone she trusted. And since then, she is now openly talked about the trauma and openly talked about how it was the next door neighbors, and not this random boy from church that she had blamed everything on. And it was the next door neighbors, it wasn't this random boy from church, but he seemed like a safer person to blame it on than. They were very, very highly threatened. They threatened to hurt us, they threatened to hurt them, they threatened to use weapons against them. So, I mean, I don't blame them for not telling us, because that would have been really scary. I would say we've seen the trauma and the PTSD the most in my oldest daughter. She's had a lot of flashbacks, a lot of flashbacks. And at one point, her flashback was where we lived, their house was to the right of us. And she would go through the cut through their backyard to go to our backyard. And when she would have these flashbacks where we used to live, where there was massive woods behind our house, she would have a flashback and then run to the house to the left of us. But it wasn't a house, it was just woods. And so then she would just start running through the woods. And we're trying to chase her. And I had had knee surgery a month after this all had come out. So I was trying to chase her in the woods with my messed up knee that just had surgery on. And she got lost multiple times. We've had to have the police come multiple times. We've had to rescue her with the dogs. I mean, she just, her brain just shuts down and goes into complete fight or flight. And that has been really, really scary. For a while, she had something called PNES seizures. And so she was at gymnastics, and she fell and landed on the back of her head. And she was, from what we've been told, she was hit in the head, in the back. And it just, the similar feeling instantly sent her into these, basically, like, her brain just completely disassociates and has a seizure. And it's a non-epileptic seizure. And it's a full-blown seizure, shaking, eyes twitching. I mean, a full-blown seizure, but it's her brain's way of, this is way too much. I can't manage this. And so I'm just going to have this instead. But she would have them, like, we went to Chicago to watch the Red Sox-Cubs game, because I'm a huge Red Sox fan and my husband is a huge Cubs fan. And she had a seizure getting off the train. So it was really hard. You had to be on alert at all times just in case it happened.
Mm-hmm. And how did you and your husband cope with the guilt as a parent? You obviously, I think that's a pretty normal thing to feel like I didn't protect them enough. I wasn't as careful maybe as they should have been. How did you deal with that? Because even when my kid falls and hurts themselves on accident, you feel that. You just,
yeah,
any kind of pain, you feel like you should have been there. You should have done something. How did you two deal with that?
Well, we talked about it a lot together. We shared our feelings to each other with it. And we're doing our own individual therapy, but for a while we did couples counseling just to process what has happened to our family. And it wasn't our fault. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. It was their fault. It was.
Yes.
And my kids still sometimes say to this day, it was my fault. I should have told. No, it's the people's fault. Mm-hmm. It's the people's fault. It has nothing to do with you.
Right. Right.
You just need to be told that over and over and over and over again. Right. And I've just learned with God's grace to give myself grace because I don't know what else I could have done.
Right, right. I think that we have to remember that Satan is an accuser.
Yeah.
And he is going to constantly tell you that it is your fault and you should have. And
yeah.
That's just how he works because he wants to pile on guilt and shame and all of that.
Yeah. So. And he really likes pastors' families.
He does. He does.
He really likes them.
Yeah, he's nasty. What about legally? What happened to that family? What did you guys do?
Nothing, unfortunately. Because we moved states, it was a really tricky situation. There's not a Department of Children and Family Services in South Dakota where there is other places, and so it's all done by the police, and it was a very small town. So we did call the police and say, this is what happened, and they said, unless my girls go through a full forensic evaluation, they're not even going to go check on the other kids in that house. There's basically nothing we can do. And at this point, our therapist has told us that we would probably lose a case because there's no way to prove anything other than what they've said in therapy.
Wow. That's hard to deal with, isn't it?
It is very hard to deal with. And especially now, my daughter's flashbacks, where my daughter's starting to really talk about the sexual abuse in her therapy. And her flashbacks this past week have been really bad. She'll just start screaming. And then she'll freeze and then just start screaming at the top of her lungs. And she just has the image of what had happened to her kind of come into her mind. And it's almost like a seizure without her seizing. Like her brain goes into another place, even though this time she's not actually shaking. And it's really hard. Every time it happens, I'm like, oh, I want those people to die. I want so many bad things to happen to them.
Sure. Right.
Because that's a normal response.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an appropriate response. I think it would be way worse if we were like, yeah, whatever, it's okay.
Right. Right. And then you have to work through the forgiveness, right?
Yes.
How is that going for you?
Not great. You know, I've actually been really impressed with my kids. I think my kids are doing better at this than my husband and I are, because one of my daughters came up to me, my middle daughter came up to me, and she said, you know, I pray for this little girl because what was happening to us was probably happening to her. Mm-hmm. It's not her fault. It was so, so touching that a 10-year-old, I think she was 9 at the time, could say something like that about the person who hurt her. I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I pray that God will give me the desire to want to want to want to want to want to want to forgive them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that sometimes as believers, we have a tendency to think, oh, well, you should just forgive, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're in it, and it is a real, true hurt.
Yeah.
It's not just someone offended me or something like this, but this is, you have caused true pain and anguish. You've changed our lives. You've affected our home, you've affected my kids, to actually work toward forgiveness. And it's okay that I think it takes some time. I praise the Lord that you're wanting to get there. I think I was telling the Lord this morning in my own devotions an area that I'm struggling with. And I said, Lord, I need you to give me this desire, because in my flesh, I just don't have it.
Yeah.
And I think that forgiveness can be that way. You can be honest with God and say, Lord, I don't have forgiveness for this person. I don't even feel like I want to, but I know I need to. Would you give me your forgiveness? Because I think in our flesh, there's just no capable way of getting there.
Yeah. And I think part of it is still my brain is trying to process that the people that we had weekly bonfires with did this to my kids. I 100% believe them, but it's still like, for real? Like, this really happened? Right. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like that.
The disconnect that kind of between the
disconnect.
The person that you knew and then the person that your kids knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had any contact with them since at all? Anything?
So we had contacted them before. We originally, the kids had told us it was the children only that sexually abused them. And it was probably about a year and a half in that we learned it was the adults. And so we originally contacted them to say, this is what our kids are saying. We're worried that something might be happening to your kids, because we didn't know it was the adults. And so we were being friends and saying, you know, care about your family and we think someone might be hurting your kids. And we sent them a certified letter because, I mean, we didn't know what to do. And we wanted to make sure that they read it. And then they called us and left a voicemail. And then my husband called back and they didn't pick up and left a voicemail. And we haven't heard from them since.
So let's talk about you and the Lord and your relationship with him and your husband's. He's still pastoring. Yeah.
He's still pastoring.
You have
he is the strongest human I've ever met.
I think he would amazing. Have to be. That would be hard as a husband to have your girls, right? Because dads have a tendency to be very protective of their girls.
And we had just started the church. So we had just moved in. October 29th was when we moved into our church. And he told us in the beginning of January.
Yeah. So you guys did you go through a time where you were angry with God, where you thought about walking away and saying, I don't want this anymore?
I don't think that I intentionally talked to God for about 2 years, to be honest. I went to church and I tried really hard. I tried so hard to want to talk to God, but I was so angry and I was so hurt. And it's really hard to listen to songs about how God doesn't fail us and God is going to protect us when he didn't protect my girls. And it feels like he failed us. And I've just kind of tried to be authentic to that rather than just singing songs because they're on the board up front that you're supposed to sing from, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I decided to do a Bible study with a friend who suggested it. And then as a result of that, I remember I was driving to McDonald's to get an ice cream sundae. And I was like, okay, you want to talk? I'll talk to you. And God was so gentle and so wonderful. And he's like, I've been here this whole time. I'm not leaving you. I've never left you. And it's okay that you didn't want to talk to me. It's okay. And since then, I've been able to talk to God and have the relationship with him that I had before. Maybe even sometimes it feels like it's stronger than it was before.
So in those first 2 years, I mean, you can't say there was something spiritually that got you through or... You know, sometimes I think
being forced to go to, I mean, as a pastor's wife,
you have to be there.
You have to be there. Yep. Like that was the one requirement that they said they had for me at our church is that I go to church.
Yes.
And so I had to be there, and I wanted to be spiritually strong for my girls. And so we always prayed. I always prayed, but it wasn't...
Your heart wasn't in it. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. It was for them.
Those of us who've walked with God long enough, we've had times where we fake it till we make it.
Yep.
You just do what you know is the right thing, even though you're not feeling it. And I would challenge anybody out there, too, to remember that our feelings should not determine our obedience. Because so many times the feelings aren't there, especially as women, we kind of live in feelings. And they can be up and down and up and down, up and down. It is important for us to just stay the course.
Yeah.
Even when you don't feel it, even when you know it's not there, stay in that Bible, stay in church, stay in prayer. Even if you're not feeling it from your heart, keep doing the motions, because I do believe that the feelings will come. God does keep pursuing us. We have to remember that He chose us first. We think about those scriptures that talk about the fact that we love Him because He first loved us. And He comes after us, and that's why we love Him in the first place. So just keep trying to do the right thing. I think it will come eventually.
And to be honest, I mean, the Psalms is full of honesty, sadness, and anger, and God can handle that. I mean, at one point, I'm pretty sure David is like, I hope that the person, their families die and they can't have more kids and they die. I mean, he gets really angry as he's praying.
There's one psalm, and I can't remember where it is, but I remember the end of it. It says that they're praying that their little ones get their heads dashed against a stone. And I'm sure that's how you have felt at times. It's when we read it, we think, oh, that's so violent. But when you go through real, real hurt, I think that the feelings are really there.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to parents who maybe are just going to find out? Maybe you're finding out that your child has been involved with something, that they were abused in some way. What would be your recommendations there?
Believe your child 1,000,000,000%, because kids don't make stuff like this up, and kids don't have details about stuff like this. A 5-year-old should not know what intercourse is, or what, do you know, like
right.
Those type of things. A lot of people I've heard say, well, you know, kids just say anything. Kids aren't going to say this. And kids don't know sexual things unless they've been taught them.
You're coming like you said, a homeschool family, pastor's family, very sheltered in that regard.
Uh-huh.
You know, these aren't kids that are in public school, maybe hearing a bunch of garbage from other kids.
Right.
It does us a credit to always investigate. I don't think you're ever going to go wrong by looking into something or trying to dig a little deeper.
Uh-huh.
It's the ones who generally gloss over things and don't ever really look into it that they end up regretting.
Yeah. And I don't think I ever saw any signs or anything like of them knowing about sex or anything like that back then. And I honestly think part of it is because they just lived in such a state of fight or flight that they just kind of manage life and shut everything out. And it was only after they started sharing that I started noticing the signs.
And what I found as a parent now of older children is when I listen when they're younger, listen to silly things, goofy stories, and whatever, then the important things come up and they're still going to want to talk to me about the important things.
Yeah, because those little things were important to them forever.
Yes.
Anyways, everything has been important.
So as we close, what do you have, any scriptures or anything that the Lord has given you that would really help someone else in a situation?
You know, the scripture that I keep coming back to was one that I shared with you what's open in front of my Bible, in my Bible, when I started talking to you, which is 2 Corinthians 1:3-5. All praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, our merciful Father and the source of all comfort. He comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. Mm-hmm. For the more we suffer for Christ, the more God will shower us with his comfort through Christ. God has used this verse in my life a lot of times. And that's kind of just, I want to say, like, my life verse that I feel like he's given me. And that is, what I go through is not useless, in that he can use it to help other people. That in the moment it feels excruciating, and I would never want it to happen to anybody. But then my friend said to me, my daughter was sexually abused. I knew what to do. I knew how to help her and encourage her and listen to her in a way that if your daughter had not been sexually abused, you wouldn't be able to do. Our church has become a more trauma-focused church as a result of this, because there are a lot of people in our church with kids with trauma. And if we hadn't gone through this, then we wouldn't be able to walk beside them through this, because it's part of life. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not anything that we necessarily did. It's just life. Yeah. People have free choice, and sometimes that means your kids get assaulted, which is horrific, but that also means other kids are getting assaulted too. And to be able to come alongside of them, and for God to take this yucky, awful stuff and to use it to bless other people, and encourage other people, has been sometimes what helps me keep going and helps me keep fighting, knowing that this is not useless, this is not in vain, that God is going to use this to do something amazing. And I can already see that in my older daughter's life. She has said, I've gone through this and I want God to at least use it. I want God to encourage other people through it. And she has friends that have trauma, and she's able to sit with them in that, which is a really beautiful thing despite all that she's gone through. And that's actually why they said, because I asked them first for permission before doing this, and that's one of the reasons that they said they were okay with me doing this, is because they wanted other people to know that they weren't alone.
And I just want to say that I've seen statistics that 1 in 4 women and girls are sexually abused in their lifetime. 1 in 4. My daughters and I were talking about this the other day, and that is that out of their friends, I mean, just think about that. If you know that, that if there's 4 of you in a room, 1 of you has been sexually abused.
And
it's so much more common than we realize. And we need to be there to support other women and other girls, and we need to be their safe place where they feel like they can open up and help them to lean on the Lord in those times. And
absolutely, one of the things that has gotten me through this is not a spiritual thing, but more an understanding of it's okay to do whatever you need to do to get through this time in your life. It's okay to use paper plates and cups because you're too depressed and too discouraged to do dishes. It's okay to give your kids hot dogs, even though you normally make them. I mean, we have so many food allergies, and so normally I would make them like big meals, and I just couldn't. I had gave them hot dogs because that's all I had in me, but I was still feeding them. And I was, my coping skills were, and still are sometimes, Diet Coke and Starbucks and M&Ms, and that's okay.
Don't put so much pressure on yourself to be perfect. Sometimes you just have to get through the moment.
And that happens in general when trauma comes, sometimes you're just in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, and that will happen. There will be times when you're in survival mode, and then it will go back to being, feels like almost normal, and then you go back to survival mode. I bought paper plates this week because mm-hmm. our family is in survival mode with my daughter's flashbacks right now, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But it honestly took me a long time to get to that place where I felt like it was okay. That doesn't make you a bad Christian. It doesn't mean anything other than that's what God is giving you right now to cope with life.
And I praise the Lord for those friends. You said you had family and friends who came alongside in that first week or so and really helped you to survive that, to get through those first couple weeks. You know, we need to be that if someone close to us
absolutely goes
through trauma, not just in a nosy way. I'm going to challenge you. Don't be nosy. Don't be, oh, I just want to know what's going on, so I want to be there. Don't do that. But be the friend who brings the meals, who mows their lawn, who helps them to maybe clean up whatever needs cleaning up, or just to stay away, drop off a gift card or whatever.
God brought us to a co-op that is so trauma understanding. It's just been incredible to know that my kids are in a place where if my older daughter has a seizure in the middle of crochet class, no one's going to freak out on her. And they're just going to walk beside her and help her. But one of the things that they have done is that when we were really running through the woods all the time and we were constantly watching to make sure that my daughter didn't run, a whole bunch of women came over and cleaned my house. And it was really embarrassing for me because, I mean, who wants somebody to just come over and see all your mess, especially when you're living in paper plates piled out of the ceiling because you're just so stressed out.
Yeah.
And they just came over and wiped my floor and lined up our shoes and vacuumed and washed windows a couple of times. And it was such a big blessing because it taught me it's okay to depend on people to help you get through this, that you're not alone, even if you feel like you're alone.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be hard because you want to clean up before they come over, but
yeah.
But it is good. It's good to humble yourself. And then when it's your turn, you get to be the person on the other end.
Get to do the exact same thing for someone else.
Yeah. 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 Praise the Lord. So where are you all right now? Where are you with God right now? And then where are your girls and you emotionally and physically?
So with God, I feel like I'm in a really great place. I was listening to a song yesterday because I was praying about what to say and what to share. And do you know the song Firm Foundation by Corey Asbury?
No, I don't think I've heard it.
It's amazing, beautiful song, absolutely beautiful song. And it's about how we build our life on a firm foundation. And it's the story in Matthew about how the man built his house on sand. And part of the chorus is, the rains came and the winds blew, but my house was built on you. Mm. And it just, I feel like that perfectly sums up our family. Satan threw absolutely everything he could at us. I mean, I'm sure he could throw more at us, let's be real. Mm-hmm. But he threw some really horrible stuff at us. And our family is stronger now as a result. And our foundation is still in Christ.
Amen. Yeah.
And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
No matter what we face, God's grace will carry us through. Use His strength for your journey. If you know of someone who has a story of God's amazing grace working in her life through hardship, we would love to hear from you at carriedbygracepodcast@gmail.com. Join us again next time as we continue to grow and are carried by grace.
Oh, can't you see that grace carried me?